Hey, Molly.
Yo, what's up?
You leaving already?
Yeah, I gotta go.
Well, let me come with you. I'm gonna get out of here.
All right.
Yes, ma'am.
First position. Faster. Second position. Third position. Fourth position. Fifth position. And once again, fluidly.
On Friday, February 22nd, Film Wax and Tribeca Film present a week-long theatrical engagement of the indie film Northeast, directed by Gregory Cohen at Rerun Theater in Dumbo, Brooklyn. Northeast is the story about Will, played by David Call, an unemployed and aimless playboy living in Brooklyn who has spent his 20s skating on easy charm from one casual, distant affair to the next. Noticing his friends' happiness as they gradually settle into steady jobs and committed relationships, Will decides to trade apathy for effort in order to find someone with whom he can start the next phase of his life. Shot on 16mm film with artful direction and honest performances, Northeast is a vividly naturalistic portrayal of the pressures of an impending adulthood. My guests today are director Gregory Cohen, and actors David Call and Eleanor Hendricks. Northeast is Gregory's first feature. David has been in a number of feature films, including Breaking Upward and Tiny Furniture, as well as doing much television. Eleanor has also been keeping quite busy and appearing in many independent films of note, including A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints, The Pleasure of Being Robbed, Daddy Long Legs, The Dish and the Spoon, Bad Fever, Nancy Please, and most recently in Kuichi-san and the Safdie Brothers short, The Black Balloon. I welcome Gregory Cohen, David Call, and Eleanor Hendricks to Film Wax Radio. You'll say hello and identify yourself. That way, hopefully those who are listening can identify the men.
Right.
And so we need a low voice, a medium voice, and a high voice.
How about a German accent?
Oh, yeah, an affected accent. That was actor David Call, and then we also have Eleanor Hendricks, lovely actress and photographer.
Hello. Good morning. I'm Eleanor.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
And finally, filmmaker Gregory Cohen.
Hello.
Welcome, Gregory.
Thanks.
Gregory made a film last year called Northeast.
It was made a while ago.
Like, no, we're not going to say that. No. I was even sort of wondering if I should even say that. Like, you know, David recently made a feature film.
Sure.
His first.
Yeah, exactly.
Called Northeast. And I know it had a one-off screening at Rerun some time ago, right?
Yeah.
But the film is having a resurrection.
Yeah, thanks in part to you. So
whatever.
Appreciate it.
Well, I watched again last night.
Cool.
And I want to...
That was
smart. It had been a little while.
I haven't seen it in years, so...
That's funny. You just made it recently. You must be talking about the short that preceded it.
That's true. The sequel.
Yeah, the prequel.
Right.
Something. And I was watching, and I was like, at the end, I was like, I don't know, I really like this film a lot. I was just very inspired. It just kind of stuck in my craw, as they say. And again, when I approached you, I think it was going to be a one-off also. And then it just sort of evolved into this opportunity, and Tribeca's behind it, so.
They are.
Good news.
Yeah. Thanks, Tribeca.
Yeah, thanks, Tribeca.
That's nice. Thanks, Rerun. Thanks, Tribeca.
Thanks, Film Wax.
How's Rerun doing?
Well, you know, IFP has been programming it.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Now we've had some success with this documentary called My Brooklyn. It's about this filmmaker made this movie about how she was an incidental gentrifier, even though she's been here for many years. I don't know about you guys. You don't live in Brooklyn. I know Eleanor, right? Yeah. But
I still live in Brooklyn.
You're in Brooklyn.
I also live in Brooklyn.
You're
yeah.
in Brooklyn. So I don't know if you've seen, but what's going on, like, with neighborhood after neighborhood. I mean, you started in Williamsburg.
I've been here for 12 years, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen it. Yeah.
I look out the window and I see it. I mean, it's just in every neighborhood now.
Yeah.
I look in the mirror and I see it.
Yeah, there's that, too.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, so where the Northeast was filmed entirely, except for there was one segment.
There's suburbs stuff.
That was done upstate, I assume, or...
But yeah, I think...
Can't be that far.
All New York stuff was filmed in the borough of Brooklyn. I'm trying to think. I think it was all in Brooklyn. so yeah.
Except for this one segment, two-thirds of the way through or so, right?
Yeah, but that's in the suburbs.
Right.
So,
but to tell the story, does somebody want to tell the story? Because I don't want to hear my voice.
The story
of Northeast. We'll get that out of the way. And then
basically,
we'll also mention that we're going to be at Rerun over the week, starting Friday the 22nd of February, right, at Rerun in Dumbo for a week-long engagement. And hopefully all you guys will be there at some point or other if your schedules permit. To meet everybody.
And everyone should come and bring their girlfriends or boyfriends because it's a good date movie. I wanted to make a movie that was kind of about a womanizer, I guess, is really how it started. I started with sort of a little bit of a stereotype, and then I wanted to extrapolate on that and see what that stereotype actually...
The Lothario stereotype?
Yeah, like what it actually looks like in real life. Because the three of us all kind of talked about it when we were making it. I think it crosses gender barriers, mm-hmm, and there's this weird kind of thing to dating where normal guys become womanizers and normal women become kind of manizers, and it's this weird, violent manner of dating where people are just sifting through people they don't like to find someone that they actually do like. And I just found that interesting, and that's sort of what I wanted to make a movie about.
So David plays Will, who is something of a womanizer. He's definitely trying to fill some sort of gap in his emotional life, and he has a string of affairs.
Yeah, I would say I don't think he's a womanizer so much as a woman enthusiast.
Well, that's maybe a good one.
I'm going to use that from now on.
A woman enthusiast. Do we have any woman enthusiasts?
I think he's just an empty void, and he's just filling his life with some sort of stimulus, which happens to be women.
In the
women.
Yeah.
But it's barely even satisfying what he needs. I mean, it's not really.
Right. Satisfying. It's not getting to the main point, which is some deep sense of loneliness and disconnect, right? And
with himself.
Right.
Right.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's that
he's
empty void.
Of.
I mean, I guess that's one way to think about it, but I mean, I think when we were talking about it, like as actors and directors and producers, and when everyone's like discussing, because, you know, on the page, this is kind of like a unfunny Seinfeld episode if you read the script, because it's just really people talking about nothing. Mm-hmm. But I think when we were talking about like what this thing is really about,
I want to come back to that point though in a moment.
The unfunny Seinfeld version of this. Mm-hmm. Well, basically, I think, you know, when we were discussing it, we all just sort of didn't want to come to conclusions, and that was a big deal. Is, you know, by taking a stereotype, something like a womanizer, that's just such a conclusive thing. Right. People are pegging you into a corner as this type of person. And like I said, I was sort of living this experience partially, and I never felt like I was a bad person. And, you know, I was maybe hurting some women here, and women were hurting me, and it was just this bizarre cycle of violence of dating, and I didn't want to draw conclusions as to being like, this is why this happens, and this is why it's wrong, or this is why it's right, or he's filling his, you know, we just sort of discussed it from a character perspective without trying to make an audience like have some sort of theme that they get it and suddenly all is realized. The friend character comes in and points at David and says, you just don't get it, do you? And then theme.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's one of the things I like. I mean,
and
I wasn't
sure. He
finds
the one, and, you know.
And then he runs back to Brooklyn. And
right. The last scene is him running back to her. To her.
Running over the Williamsburg Bridge.
Yeah.
So, like,
first of all, one thing I want to say, and then I do want to talk about Molly. You said you didn't want to have all the solutions thematically and character-wise. What I appreciated, I think, what I appreciate about the film is that you're not handheld through it, that it's not like you're being told what to think about everybody or what's going to happen. You know, I think that's smart as far as directorial and script, but also it's treating your audience with a lot of respect.
Which is funny because there was at one point a suggestion brought to include like a voiceover into what Will is thinking. Which I was, I mean, that was a moment where I was immediately, I was terrified. I was like,
was that someone from another company?
Yeah, it was just, you know, I pass this out, you know, you have to raise money and you have to just send things to people. And there was very early. I mean, I remember getting people saying like, I have no one to root for, and things like, you should include a voiceover so that we can get into his head and understand what he was thinking. And you're just like, well, this is the whole problem, is that we're trying not to do that and trying to, you know, like Eleanor said, kind of a blank canvas.
I mean, I think I liked it because so many movies are either about relationships or about dating, but then it's like, oh, people are dating, but then look, they found this wonderful person. Or like, oh, they're dating and they realize they don't need a man and they can stand strong on their own. They're like, there's always some sort of moralistic solution, because I think we're all sort of looking for that mm-hmm. in our relationships, or when you're dating, you're like, oh, I'm just gonna find like that one person, and we're gonna like cuddle and cook breakfast and make babies and everything will be great. And it's not, in the majority of your life, is that in between where you're not really sure what's going on. And you know, I think that's what we're exploring, which is something that is almost not ever seen, or at least not in like a very like packaged mm-hmm. like.
I hadn't seen it, and that's why I write plenty of things that I'm like, this sucks and I'll never make this, but this was one that even 2 years after writing it, I was kind of like, you know what, I really want to make this. Mm-hmm. And that's how I judge if it's something that I actually want to go forward with in making, or if there's a lot of money involved. That's the only other.
Yeah. how'd you get a copy of the script? How did you get involved in the casting?
How did I? I guess the casting director reached out to me directly because Greg had seen some of my work in other films, my acting work in other films, and had thought that I could possibly be right for this one character that he had been writing, mm-hmm. or maybe even wrote me.
I did.
Did you write with Herman?
There were three characters that I wrote with people in mind. Sorry, David, you weren't one of them.
I have to say,
I hadn't seen any of David's work at that point. But yeah, I wrote Eleanor for a character who was originally, there was actually two characters. So Molly and Nora. And as soon as we started casting, the script came together and I realized like what the movie was, which is kind of an insane thing to think about now. But I combined those two characters into Molly. A composite. And that was absolutely Eleanor. And then I also wrote the character of Jason for a friend of mine, Jason Selvig, and a character of Lauren for this girl that I actually had a similar relationship with named Lauren Shannon. So, and they're amazing in the movie. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
So I knew audition. I wanted you. You did audition.
I was duped. I thought I did a great audition, but really, the whole thing
the whole
was
time
planned.
It was like a big conspiracy.
I already
conspiracy.
Got the part. Yeah. But
thank you for doing it.
Yeah, no, thank you for writing the part.
I think Molly plays the friend, and you sense again, because you don't ever get told exactly, that she's obviously somebody who had a relationship on some level at some point in the past. They meet up, incidentally, at a mutual friend's party, and you can tell that Will, again, David Call's character, is trying to get closer to Molly. And she is avoiding that, right? You're like slipping.
Her judgment, it seems to be a little bit more sound.
Very sound.
Yeah. I mean, but she very well could have been on the same exact path as he was, but has made the decision to sort of confine to this idea of a relationship, and whether or not that's good for her, you know, is sort of undetermined also, but she's made that decision to sort of settle into a normal lifestyle with a boyfriend who seems pretty safe. And she doesn't want to be distracted by that, mm-hmm. by Will, by David's character.
That boyfriend was played by Tate Ellington, who I don't think I said two words on set to, because he just started performing and I never even, so his performance was amazing.
Yeah.
I think you're probably a very good director, is my guess.
I remember those scenes, though, with you three, when we were in the suburbs, and it was Eleanor, David, and Tate in the... you know, kind of on the couch, and they were actually drinking, and we were drinking. I never said action. I never said cut. You guys were just sort of going, and it was kind of the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Mm. So that was, like, my favorite.
Yeah, the drinking helped.
Yeah.
I
remember that scene for some reason.
We did keep, Yvette, our production designer, just kept pouring in more wine. I do remember that part of it.
Well, I will say, I you know, the more we talk about it, the more I think about this film, it fell under the radar a little bit, and so I'm hoping people will hear and read about the fact that we're doing this unusual theatrical and mm-hmm. decide to kind of come out and support it, because it's refreshing to see this kind of story, which is reminds me of other thematically about other films I've seen, probably many, but very rarely where it's just like you get these characters so well, and they're played by such really, you guys are super talented in this film. Super talented.
Shoot. Like,
you guys are super awesome.
That's nice.
Thanks. Super awesome. Wow.
I was in an event where the host kept doing that, and I was aghast at how much she was using this super in front of her.
Everything was just super.
Very steroidally adjectival.
Steroidally adjectival.
There you go. This is Adam Shartoff, host of FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show, Wednesday nights, 6:30 to 7:30 on BeBoxRadio.com. And we're talking with filmmaker Gregory Cohn and actors David Call and Eleanor Hendricks. Eleanor, of course, we've gotten to know each other a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of the work you do.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I saw, I think, what was the first thing I may have... Probably a Safdie film is my guess. Yeah. The Pleasure Being Robbed, maybe, was the first time I saw you work. And I'm like, that is such an unusual actress. And then I recognized you immediately when I saw Go Get the Rosemary, or better known as Daddy Long Legs.
Yeah.
I flopped the original title, but... why did they change that title? I know it's probably
Daddy Long. It was just because Go Get Some Rosemary was a little bit too difficult for the American public, and in Europe it stayed as that title.
Oh, okay. They had no problem with it, considering
they didn't somehow, considering the translation was impossible. But yeah, I actually just watched Daddy Long Legs again the other day, and it was really nice to see that
with
movie
some distance.
Again. Yeah, with a couple of years, it's been 3 years or so.
Wow,
jeez, really?
It's such a good movie.
I'm a dad, so I was like,
it's heartbreaking.
I was like, that whole scene, that the main sort of thing that goes on through about halfway through in Daddy Long Legs, where the children are sleeping.
Oh God!
Some say sleeping.
I was so. You got to see this, Elaine.
It's tough.
Yeah.
But similarly, just do it all in one Sunday. These very unlikable characters. I mean, or questionable. I mean, you know, on first viewing, you don't like them because they're aspects of yourself that you don't like, and so you're watching them. You don't want to be confronted with it. You don't want to question yourself. I mean, as a father, you know, I'm sure that you see similarities, whether or not you're irresponsible. I doubt that you are that bad. But
you're right.
But yeah, it's great to be putting these characters that are really reflections of ourselves on screen, and I think it's important to do that and test people. I mean, not just. Just to make people think, they resonate. They really do. This movie resonates, I think, for me.
I agree. I think it's interesting, though, because like I think mainstream audiences have problems. You know, you go see Hollywood films, and there's less of really vulnerable and kind of difficult characters. I think a lot of times those characters are so much easier. As I said, somebody with my screenplay was like, I don't have anyone I can root for. And I think that's like what people want more so. And I think part of the movement of independent film right now is kind of with characters that you maybe don't know. Yeah. What's the line in Swingers? It's like, I want you to be the guy in the rated R movie, the guy you're not so sure about.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where most independent filmmakers, you know, where their characters lie.
Gregory, earlier you had mentioned that someone recommended you put a voiceover, you know, and which is, of course... would have been a bad idea, but
you get tons and tons of notes, and you're already filtering through your own bad ideas.
But there's always going to be right. But there's several things that are happening at once with that, and one is like how there's always a dumbing down, so you get a bigger audience, which is understandable on a commercial standpoint. At the same time, we have an ability to have a shorthand now because we know we've seen a lot of films as an audience. We're more sophisticated. We don't need the voiceover because we've seen 100 films in a genre where about a lonely person who's going through a difficult time, which is, you know, a summation of what the character's going through. You don't need somebody to walk you through it.
No, you don't. Anymore. But tell TV executives that.
Yeah, it makes it easy. You know, it makes it so much easier to sell and market. I think that's the battle that everybody is kind of working towards. You go to film festivals. And
the score also. Music that will be emotionally, like, telling of where you are right now, what you should be feeling. It's just really...
Yeah, it's like cutting away to, like, shots of people crying during a sad scene. It's like, audience, cry now. See, it's sad.
And that's true. I mean, that's part of this film, too, is that there isn't... it was funny when I was delivering the movie to Tribeca, who had bought the film, I was... they were, okay, we need the music cue sheet, we need all the... I'm like, there's not a single note of music in this movie. And they were like, this is going to be the easiest delivery we've ever had, because music is what always...
That's always the...
Yeah, it's getting rights to music.
Getting the rights.
And they were just shocked. Sure. They were like, you're telling me there's not any music in this movie? I'm like, there is, from the start to finish, there's not a single note
of music. That's amazing. I wanted to just also finish up with my thought about your casting. I mean, I've seen, I think, enough of your films, Eleanor, where you don't... Is it an intentional decision, the types of roles that you take or get cast in? Because the characters are always a bit left of center. Well, you know what I'm saying. They're always more interesting. They're unless I've missed, and I probably have missed a couple of things, but they're always very interesting characters and always a little bit behaving
Behaving what?
Ellipse. I don't know. In a way that's not stereotypical.
Thank you. I think
you have a car thief.
Right.
And you have, I mean, there's a, right, and the character in,
partly, big part of that is just, I mean, I wish I could do normal right. roles.
You take it like a romantic role.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Like, I thought your run on Two and a Half Men was great.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you're very beautiful, and I can't imagine you haven't been,
I do choose my roles. I do choose the projects that I want to be a part of, and
right.
that's just a conscious decision. It's also just an automatic, instinctual decision. I just need to do something that I can do, that I feel comfortable doing, that I believe in, mm-hmm. and those are just, it just goes hand in hand. I don't say I'm not going to do, you know, a conventional, or I don't know, a character that's, quote, normal. It's just how it's partly how I play it, I suppose, and it's also, you know, the projects that I find to be interesting have more dimensional characters, I suppose. Yeah. You know?
And in the actors, I've found the more that I do this, that there's sort of an illusion of choice, and there's just like stuff yes. just comes your way, and what comes your way that you like is what you end up doing. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're playing a lot of like normal studly guys, then those are the parts that are going to come your way. And,
yeah.
you know, like if you start working with people who are doing different things and taking on like projects, you know, that have sort of other levels or just sort of unconventional, then people who are into those types of things are going to see them. And then right. they're going to be the ones that are going to ask you to do your thing. And mm-hmm. you know.
I see. Right. So at some time or other, you're going to have to own your career of characters and of jobs you've gotten, in the sense mm-hmm. that
yeah.
it can't be just a coincidence. You've always kind of.
Oh, yeah. And most of the projects that I found that I've cared about, you know, that or that mean something to me artistically are ones that in some way reflect like some facet of my life mm-hmm. or my interests or my own personal aesthetic, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, and talk about that. So where are you, we're kind of I mean, you've done actually a significant amount of television at this point also.
Yeah, man. I got to pay the rent while I do these no-budget indies.
And that's another thing. That's why I do casting. I back it up with other work.
Oh, right.
I can't.
Right.
Yeah, like I can't. Like right now I'm working on a TV show, and that ends. And as soon as that ends, I go straight into like a low-budget indie that I love and that's amazing.
Can you mention who
it is? Yeah, yeah. It's called Gabriel, and it's going to be me and Rory Culkin, and it's directed by this guy named Lou Howe, who I'm actually going to meet with as soon as I'm done with this, across the street.
Bring him on. Let's knock the show out. You know you're going to be back anyway. Come on.
I probably will. Lou is directing it. It's his first feature. He's done a couple shorts, and then his brother Ben, who produces for So Young Kim and Brad Gray, is producing it. This guy, Luca Borghese, is produced for a bunch of great filmmakers, is also producing it.
Can I just say that
since
you brought up So Young Kim and Brad Gray, mm-hmm. I literally told a friend of mine that if I died before this movie got made, hand the script to them and tell them to make it and give them the money. I actually said that to a friend of mine because I love their film so much.
Well, nice. Glad they didn't get the script.
No, I know. I'm glad I didn't die. It was a moment of panic.
Thank God you didn't die.
That's controversial, I know. Gregory, I'm glad you're not dead. Aren't I a good friend?
Yeah, but, you know, you got to find the balance, and it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sure, I'd be nice to be making, like, $5, $10, $30 million movies, but, you know, oftentimes those are not ones that have any sort of, at least for me, any sort of, like, artistic weight.
Well, yeah, maybe they...
Or if they do...
They could set up a lifestyle where, of course, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then I don't have to... See, like your film, I don't have to finish all my thoughts because you know where it's going. And,
yes.
And I have too much respect for my audience to finish simplistic sentences. So I'll just interrupt myself all the time. And so, again, the film Northeast, which all my guests elaborated on, is going to be at Rerun in Dumbo on February 22nd through the 28th, the end of the month, and Rerun in Dumbo, Brooklyn. And we'll all be there in some manner or other. Physically or otherwise.
I'm going to go see the movie again. I'd love to see the movie again.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time.
Or, you know, and then, you know, hang out afterwards for whatever, you know, Q&As. Because I think it is the kind of movie that people want to afterwards have feelings about, whether positive
or
negative.
In all of our Q&As, there have been, more so than almost any other film I've done, there have been, like, very pointed, very, like, intelligent questions. Is always very welcome.
Another like another warning that somebody had given me was I did genuinely write this movie, and I said I kind of want to write a movie that may play better on second viewing, or is the type of movie that is better as you're talking about it, more so than while you're actually watching it. And that was another warning that I was told, like, you should never make a movie like that. But it was, like, consciously in my head, because if I think about the movies that I love more than any others, it's the ones that I'm just, like, walking down the street and I somehow have realized I've just walked, like, 3 blocks while thinking about some movie that was just stuck in my head. And, you know, like an Eric Romer film or something. Yeah. I don't know.
And also the movies that you see the first time, and then as soon as they're done, you're like, I have to go watch that again. Like, when I saw The Master this year, I was just like, okay, I'm buying a ticket tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much there that I couldn't figure out on the first watching, but that's sticking with me that, like, I need to go watch it again. Mm-hmm. Killing Them Softly, I also did the same thing.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that either. I love it. And so many people have been, like, shitting on it, and I understand
the Brad Pitt stigma.
It's so good. It's a masterpiece. Like, the direction, the sound design alone, like, they should win the Oscar for it. And they're not getting any recognition.
It is funny, though. Like, you mentioned the Brad Pitt thing, and what we were just talking about, like, getting jobs. Yeah, there's stigma about you guys getting jobs. Isn't it amazing, though, that, like, these actors get famous and then they become hated because like, we build them up to this level of success and then we just want to, like, tear the... It's like LeBron James. It's like we just want to, like, take these celebrities that we make popular.
Some of them participate in that, you know, sort of thing. But Brad Pitt, say what you will.
He does good work.
I think he's one of the greatest. I think he's one of the greatest filmmakers working in Hollywood. If you look at the films that he produces, like Andrew Dominik, Steve McQueen's new film,
I didn't know that.
Totally.
Oh yeah, he's producing 12 Years a Slave. All of Andrew Dominik's films. Like, his company has their fingers in all these amazing pies.
Completely agree.
And someone using his power for good. In my opinion.
So, So if you're listening, anybody from Brad Pitt's production.
Yeah, Plan B.
Paul is a big fan.
Love you guys. Hire me for something, please.
And Eleanor, do you have
an opinion about Brad Pitt?
Yes, what do you think?
Everybody has
an
opinion.
I feel like this is where we should just go with this.
Well, I was asking about work coming up, or something you're involved with now. You may be. I saw Koichi-san, which...
You did see it?
Well, I started at La-Di-Da.
Yeah.
Was that the one that you shot in Japan?
Yeah, in Okinawa.
Oh, shoot, when?
It played at the La-Di-Da Film Festival. Yeah, that movie. I love that.
How can we see that movie?
I have a feeling it's not... I don't know.
I have a copy of it. That's how you can see it.
You do have a copy of it?
Yeah. Oh, they gave me...
That's nice.
I had on Miriam Bale right around that with Dustin, Alex, and... Yeah. I'm using shorthand, I'm sorry. Dustin DeFake, Alex Karpovsky.
Right.
And Miriam, they came on and talked about the festival and their films and all. Fantastic. And one everybody was very excited about was Koichi-san. And so I got a bunch of screeners, and that was one of them.
It's very much sort of piecemealed together, and it brings you on this sort of psychedelic voyage into this boy's life, and it's this duality of, you know.
Anyway, I appreciate everybody coming. I understand you all declined going to Sundance just to come on the show.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys. The last, Eleanor and David, great meeting you.
Oh, thanks, man. You too.
And I hope to see you in a couple, you know.
Well, you'll see me when we start screening.
Good.
I'll be here.
I can't be there, but I hope to see you soon after
that. I'll be around.
I'm here. I'll be there.
I live here.
Gregory's like,
making these little movies.
I'm like, I gotta do this alone. I'll just drink
whiskey.
Not at
all.
Bye.
No. And thank you, Gregory, for making Northeast, and then for collaborating with me on this event. Again, Northeast is the film, and it's going to be a rerun on February 22nd through the 28th. You can find out details about tickets at reruntheater.com. Go to filmwax.com, which will send you to reruntheater.com. Anyway,
or just call Adam.
Yeah, and thanks for coming out and supporting, this film, and for
thank you
for listening, and thank you guys.
Thank you, Adam, for supporting the film and supporting us filmmakers. Little measly thing.
Ask me in your show. No, I kid. Thank you very. That's such a terrible joke. Good place to end the show. Thanks.